from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom?
Feel
like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything taken care of.
It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
And welcome to another week of the Howard Eskin podcast. This is podcast number 3. I don't know if I should number them or just tell you another week of the Howard Eskin podcast. Whatever, it's number 3. So maybe if you're listening to other podcasts and you go back and listen to them, there would be a point of reference that you could go to. And if you want to subscribe on iTunes, somehow you found this podcast, but it may be because I put it out on Facebook, the link, or I put it out on Twitter. If you want to subscribe on iTunes for the podcast, you search for the Howard Eskin podcast. Unique name, isn't it? And by the way, after you're done, leave a rating and a review on iTunes if you so choose. All right, this week, a couple of interviews, two of them. One of them is John Harbaugh, who is the head coach, as you should know, of the Baltimore Ravens. And he was one of the many assistant coaches under Andy Reid who became head coaches in the NFL. So he is just another one along the line. And as I explained to people last week when, if you heard Sean McDermott, they got to get together at the owners' meetings to go over Andy Reid stories. And John Harbaugh has a funny, interesting Andy Reid story that involves Veterans Stadium. I'll leave it open to what he talks about concerning Andy Reid and Veterans Stadium. But he talks about a lot of things, how tough it is to win a Super Bowl, which it is very difficult to win a Super Bowl, how it kind of came together in Baltimore, and why it is so tough. So John Harbaugh will be on this week's podcast. Also, the first one I'm going to play is Ron Darling. Now, I don't know how many people have heard Ron Darling. He's a very good color analyst on baseball games. He works for the Mets as a color analyst along with Keith Hernandez, both players from the 1986 World Champion Mets. But he also does games for TBS or TNT, whatever it is that does the Major League Baseball playoffs. And Ron is very good, has some really, really, really interesting things to say, and he covers a lot of things. And also, I want to talk about the draft and why people are in love with one player and what it is about that player, and one player that teams may be a little skeptical of, but I'll do that after we take care of the interviews. Now, Ron Darling, let me give you a little background. It was five or six, and I looked it up, and I think it might have been six straight years of double-digit wins. In 1986, the Mets had a terrific pitching staff. He won 15 games on that staff. And there's reference point, but recently, as you well know, one of the Phillies pitchers, Ramos, threw at Cabrera. There could be more to that than just a bat flip from last year. But whatever the case, Ron Darling had some interesting thoughts on a bat flip, appropriate when it's not appropriate, the game, what's happened to the game. There's all different kinds of things that Ron Darling had to say. But he was a very good pitcher on that 86 team. He did win a world championship. He does care more about the trophy than he does about the money, which is absolutely different than many, not all, than many of the players today. Think about that. How many players today would care more about the money than the trophy if there was a big difference in money? Signing with a team you had no chance to win with if they paid you more money. I get it. When is enough enough? I'll get into that after the interview. And I also, along the way, other than the draft, the 76ers, the embarrassing things that they do, they have topped themselves with embarrassment. Absolutely topped themselves with embarrassment. I will talk about it when we play both these interviews. Ron Darling would be first and John Harbaugh would be next. But listen to Ron Darling. He really says, he's very articulate in what he says. He's very thoughtful. The thought is there in what he says. And it will be, I think it will be interesting to you, even if some people don't remember Ron Darling as a player. I do, because I went and watched all those New York Mets playoff and World Series games in 1986. It was a great series. That, by the way, in case if there's a baseball point of reference that you don't know, that was the series where the ground ball went through Bill Buckner's legs in the, I forget what inning, it might have been the eighth inning of that game when he shouldn't have been in the game. John McNamara was the manager of the Red Sox, should have had him out for defensive purposes. And if the Red Sox win that game, they win the World Series. The Mets had 17 times during that inning, they had two strikes. 17 times, 17 pitches during that inning, there were two strikes for them to get out of the inning. And then the ground ball that just rolled through the legs of Bill Buckner. But that, if you needed a point of reference, that was the World Series that the Mets won, and Ron Darling was one of the pitchers in the starting rotation. All right, let's hear from Ron Darling, and I'll comment on things that he said afterwards. All right, Ron Darling with us. And Ron, we saw in the first Phillies-Mets series, we saw one of the Phillies pitchers, Ramos, throw at Cabrera.
Yes.
And it goes back to last year for flipping the bat.
Yes.
Is that different than it used to be when you played the game?
Different in this sense. I don't fault Ramos for being angry at what happened last year. But it was a 2-2 tie, so I would have picked a better spot later in the year to not throw at his head or throw over his head. I would have drilled him, certainly. But I would have picked a better spot because it's a 2-2 game. That will come with experience from Ramos. I think that I've changed my mind 100% since the WBC. I'm all for authenticity. For guys that are of that ilk to throw their bat when it's a big home run.
Okay.
Now, last night, Odubel Herrera threw his bat on a fly ball to the outfield. Not only makes him look silly, it makes the bat flip silly also. So you have to know when to do it. If we use Jose Bautista's example in the playoffs last year or 2 years ago, the most appropriate time to do it. Tom Lawless, when he did it for the St. Louis Cardinals, and the ball was a wall scraper and just went out, he could have had a Herrera moment. So, but I do think there are times that the bat flip works for today's game. It works for today's fan, and people love it. And I changed my mind after watching the WBC. I think that authenticity, again,
right.
If people really feel it and they want to do it, I think that's something that today's young person wants to see.
Pete McCannon said he talked to Odubel Herrera You know, he flips it on walks.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't there a point, and you being a former pitcher, you say, now, do you really have to do that? And don't you want to just, you want to find somebody to hit with that baseball, right?
Yeah, well, you know, when I was pitching, I certainly wouldn't strike out a guy and say, go sit down.
Right.
You know, and who's next? Like the barbershop or something. I would never do that. So there is a sense of baseball karma or gods trying to be humble about achievement, you know. But that being said, there are moments that are no different when a pitcher strikes out to in the postseason to end a big eighth inning and puts his fist in the air and walks to the dugout. It was huge. It's worth showing that emotion, and I think fans want to see it. Again.
But isn't there a fine line when you talk about
yeah.
guy hits a home run to win a game, a
yeah.
guy gets a base hit to win
of
a
course.
Game, and everybody. But you know, there's a point where isn't there etiquette? Is there etiquette anymore?
Well, the etiquette is just. I mean, we live in a world that's gotten much more rude, and the etiquette is kind of out the window. So what we're living now is you know, the baseball rules of engagement have changed, and. You know, we see guys all the time throwing their bat. I would say that a home run in the second inning when you're losing 4-1 is probably not a time to flip your bat. But I think authentic emotion, guys coming to the top step of the dugout to hug their player, jumping up after a great catch and showing the ball, all those things I think are things that are good for the game. I think they're going to continue in the game, and I think they're going to continue for two reasons. One, they're authentic, and two, the retaliatory nature of today's pitcher is not there. The Mets in last night's ball game had they had 14 extra base hits, 7 home runs, and 140 swings. That seemed like they were trying to hit a home run. The only way you counter that is that you pitch inside and you knock people down and you make sure that, hey, I just saw your swing. I don't want to see it again. And that is out of the game. So I don't think it's ever coming back.
But, you know, another part of the game is the players, I don't know if you call it, in basketball, Larry Brown said, learn how to play the right way.
Yeah.
Okay. Do the players play the right way, whether it's fundamentals or what? And really, they don't in a lot of cases. What's happened to the game?
Well, I think what has happened is that the players make so much money that the players kind of run the game. It used to be the owners ran the game. The rule book kind of ran the game. But, you know, we've kind of bastardized the game in the way we have replay and can't run over the catcher and you can't break up a double play. So, you know, the more we try, the more we take away from, I always call it the world's most perfect game, the more we try to change it, with that change is going to come changes from the players. And I think that we're on our way with that. You know, baseball 50 years from now won't look at all like it looks now.
You know, when you were a pitcher, do you remember, and now you can't get fined, do you remember throwing at somebody because you didn't like the way you acted?
Yeah, no. I mean, I probably in my career threw, I always hit him when I threw at him. So I probably hit, I would say, 40 to 50 batters.
On purpose?
Yeah. And it was always for the right reason. I never hit anybody because they hit a home run off me. Never hit a home run off me. I always felt as though if a guy hits a home run off you, it's your fault. You
right.
threw the wrong pitch. So I never wanted to hit anyone because they wore you out. But I would hit people if they had just run over my second baseman. If they had done something that I think I deemed appropriate or the team deemed appropriate, and it also gave you incredible street cred with your teammates that, you know, your hitters are being hit 4 times in the game. You know, if you didn't answer that, you couldn't really look them in the face.
Ron, the pitchers now are on pitch counts, innings. When you were pitching, you knew when you were tired, you knew when you were out of gas, but Were you ever on a real pitch count? Didn't you want to grind it out a little bit more than the numbers would allow today?
You know, in 87, we had a lot of injuries, and I had six successive starts over 140 pitches. And that doesn't make me a He-Man. Most of the athletes you see today are my size or bigger. So it's just a way of thinking. A lot of it has to do with the only way you got paid when I played is you played, and you had to go on the field. You certainly, I think there's a feeling as though, unless I feel 100%, I don't really want to be on the field. And you know, how many times did we say in the past, and you probably haven't even said in 10 years, said, boy, I'd rather take Mike Schmidt at third base at 75% than his replacement at 100%. You never say those things anymore.
No, but because the players don't want to play. The agents won't let them play in a lot of cases, right?
Yeah.
Is that hurting the game?
Yeah, I don't know what role the agents play, because I know the agents play a bigger role depending on the team. You know, I think you'd be hard-pressed to ask an owner in my day, can you name Ron Darling's agents? You know, and my agent was Steve Kaufman, who was a Philadelphia guy.
Right, I know.
And had a lot of basketball players. So maybe in Philadelphia they might have been able to remember it. But it's just nowadays, you know, you got the... You know, the acronym groups, and you have Scott Boras, and they've become as important in the game as others.
One of the things that baseball's trying to do is shorten the games. And you, as a broadcaster now, obviously don't like sitting in 3.5-hour games. You can't help it if there's bad pitching. But when you pitched, why were the games, you know, and obviously that 86 team had had really good pitching. Yeah. Why are the games shorter then, and they can't be shorter now?
Well, you know, I was called on to get 21 to 27 outs. And today's pitcher is really asked to get 15 to 18 outs. So after that, you're going to have a succession of four or five relievers. And I think that's why the game takes so long. You add replay and other things, and of course, now you've added a half hour to the game. I think over time, two things are going to happen. You're going to have a good bullpen if you have crossover guys, meaning they can get lefties as well as righties out, which is going to enable baseball to say that once you bring a pitcher in, he has to get three outs. And if they do that, I think that'll speed up the game right there, 15 minutes or so, and that's really all you need.
The money's changed. When you won the World Series in 86, I don't know what the check was then, but is it probably four or five times that now?
Yeah, it is four or five times. We were very generous. I know our traveling secretary and our PR man, Jay Horowitz, who's been here for years, we gave them a full share. So I think ours was in the 100 range. I think now it's in the $500,000 or $600,000 range. So, you know, the money was really important in those days. But when I look back on it, I never think about how much money I made. I always think about that at some point there's a big trophy sitting in Flushing.
Winning a World Series is still the most important thing back then, and I'm not so sure if that's the case now.
Yeah, you know, when I remember I fell in love with the game in 67 with the Boston Red Sox, a possible dream year, and they did not win. But I think in my lifetime, the first time I really, really paid attention to a World Series was in 1980, because I think that series just was one of the best of all time. And I just remember that I was old enough at the time to understand the game, and then 3 years later, I'd be pitching against those same boys.
So. Ron, thanks so much.
Thanks, Ron.
As you probably heard, Ron Darling is a very articulate guy. All right, so let's run it down. Bat flips. I've got my own opinion about bat flips. I don't necessarily agree with everything Ron Darling said. I don't know if outside of a winning hit that wins the ball game, that a bat flip is necessary. Listen, I love players that show expression. I love players. There's expression at home plate. There's expression on the field. If a player gets a base hit to win a game, the players run out on the field. That's excitement. There's expression and excitement at home plate when his teammates greet him if he hits a home run. Now, recently, Bryce Harper hit a three-run homer in the ninth inning to beat the Phillies. Now, that is worthy of a... If you want to flip the bat, and I don't remember Bryce Harper flipping the bat. The only thing I remember is the Phillies reliever, Benoit, walking off the mound as soon as Bryce Harper hit the ball. that situation, a bat flip, I wouldn't call it appropriate, but a bat flip is okay. There's nothing wrong with that at that point because, as Ron Darling said, when he gave up a home run, he made the mistake, not the batter. So he's the one that should shelter the responsibility. But let's get into Odubel Herrera. Odubel Herrera is out of friggin' control when it comes to bat flips. Out of control. Just totally out of control. Here's a player that flips a bat on a walk, as I said to Ron Darling. Ron Darling pointed out that he flipped a bat on a fly ball. Are you kidding me? He flips the bat. That's going to get him thrown at, and it might get other players on his team thrown at. Pete McCannon has talked to him, and he can speak the language. He can speak Spanish. He's got to make him understand that if you win a game, flip your bat. If you're in the middle of the game, don't flip your bat. You don't need to flip your bat. And especially for a fly ball, especially for a walk, it's just totally, absolutely positively ridiculous. And Odubel Herrera is out of control. Let's face facts here. Ever since the first half of last season, when he had a really good first half and he made the All-Star team, what the heck has he done? What has he done since that point? Nothing. Nothing. He's not hit well. He got a contract because I think the Phillies thought that in the arbitration world that you now live in, give him a contract. I don't know that that's good for a player when he knows he's got his money. And I don't know, he's still at times not as bad as he used to be, doesn't run out ground balls. But it's also been documented that he takes the longest of any batter between pitches, the average of 32 seconds between at-bats. Now, if baseball wants to speed up the game, and we talked about that, I talked about that with Ron Darling, they want to speed up the game, that nonsense they've got to stop. The rule is 20 seconds. There is a rule in place. It's 20 seconds between pitches. I don't think it's 20 seconds if you foul a ball off or you take a swing and a miss. You can take a little bit longer. But when you don't do either one of those two, you are not permitted by rule to take more than 20 seconds. Odubel Herrera, it's everything wrong. I don't know how he could stay in a rhythm, how he could get back, and he knows what he just saw in a pitch, and now he might be ready for another pitch. I think it's absolutely ridiculous what Odubel Herrera does. And in the end, I don't think any of this is going to make him a better player, and I think it could make him worse. All right, one of the other points that Ron Darling made, with all the different things going in baseball now, he really does make a good point about not being able to take out runners at second base, not being allowed to have the collision at home plate, the catcher not be able to block the plate. The game has been great for many, many, many years. Players get hurt on things that don't even involve that. But because a star player got hurt in Buster Posey, now they've changed the rule. If it was just a backup catcher, they would have never changed the rule. Taking a fielder out at second base on a slide is part of the game. Now, there was always a rule in place. You had to be within reach of the bag. But the game's changed too much. The game was great before, and it should have stayed great. And baseball, as he said, and I guess I don't disagree that it's going to change. The way things happen, it's going to change over the next few years, and it won't be the same game. They've got to do something because the attention span, and it's not just the millennials, it's not just the younger people, it's everybody. The game is too long. There's too much dilly-dallying. One of the things that I would do, Ron Darling would force a team when they bring in a pitcher to have him get three outs before you could change the pitcher. I don't know that I would be that drastic, but I would not permit a pitching coach and or manager to come out twice for the same pitcher in the same game. Not twice in the same inning, you have to take him out of the game, whether it's the pitching coach one time or the manager another time. As long as that pitcher is in the game, you can only come out twice. Or you can only come out once, and the second time you have to remove the pitcher. I would change that rule. The changing of the intentional walk by just making it automatic saves nothing. The last couple of years, there was an intentional walk every 2.6 games. It's ridiculous. It doesn't save anything. And I loved Ron Darling. And this shows you the difference in players, too. Players now run pitch counts. You can't pitch more than a certain amount of innings or a certain amount of pitches. Robin Roberts, and this goes back when the medicine wasn't as good, the medical knowledge wasn't as good. Robin Roberts had 36 complete games 1 year, and two of them were extra inning games. Why has this changed? It's the agents, it's the teams, but Ron Darling said there was a number of straight games where he threw 140 pitchers or more. Why can't players do that today? And the other thing, which is totally, totally, absolutely bogus, and this is the most ridiculous thing that I see, when a pitcher, kind of throws at a batter, and he throws over his head or he throws behind him, he's got no intention of hitting him, but he throws a pitch as the pitcher thinks is sending him matches, and then the batter wants to rush the mound, and the players want to come out of the dugout, and the players want to come out of the bullpen. It's garbage. It's ridiculous. Ron Darling said he threw at 40 to 50 batters in his career. I think this is great. I never heard this before. 40 to 50 batters in his career, but when he threw at them, he hit them. I don't see many guys doing that today. It's ridiculous. These guys are wimps. It's what I call false hustle. If you're going to prove a point, then hit the guy. If that's what you're going to do for the right reason, then hit the guy. Don't throw it over his head or behind him. So I thought Ron Darling was really very good. But somehow the baseball rules of engagement have changed, and it's changed for the worst. And it won't stop these things. You know, you go back to pitchers, and I don't want to take you way back, but they would throw at batters if the etiquette wasn't appropriate. All right. Coming up now on this Howard Eskin podcast, John Harbaugh is one of seven assistant coaches who are now head coaches in the NFL that got together at the NFL owners meetings in late March. At the NFL owners meetings to go over stories and what it was like to coach under Andy Reid and what it was about Andy Reid, different kind of things that they learned under Andy Reid. And I've said this before, Andy Reid was a good head coach. Obviously, by having that many coaches out there, Bill Walsh did it first, and then Mike Holmgren, you know, that tree extended, and then it was Andy Reid. And John, he's had head coaches that have gotten to the Super Bowl and a head coach in John Harbaugh who's won a Super Bowl. Ron Rivera was a head coach who got to a Super Bowl. John Harbaugh, a head coach who won a Super Bowl. And they learned a lot. But they also talked about stories, things they remember. And they talked about this when they got together and did this piece, which will be some special on NFL films. Done by NFL Films on the NFL Network. But the story, I thought this story was hilarious. Hilarious by John Harbaugh. And he talks about the Colin Kaepernick, what people are calling a blackballing, and it's totally ridiculous. All right, let's hear from John Harbaugh.
All right, you had this to get together with Andy Reid, his tree, as they call it. What did Andy Reid instill upon you guys to make you or help you become better coaches?
The number one thing I think to me is honesty. The thing I remember Andy Reid saying all the time is, hey, I'm going to shoot you straight. You know, and he said, be a straight shooter, be yourself. When I first met Andy, the thing I noticed about Andy was he wasn't trying to be anybody else. He wasn't trying to be Mike Holmgren, even though he's been around Mike Holmgren all those years. You know, when you got Andy Reid, you got the real deal. You got Andy Reid. You know, if his mustache started twitching, you knew he was mad. You know, if he's laughing or whatever. I mean, he's just a great guy to be around. And just be yourself. Believe in what you believe. Stick to your guns. You know, come to change slowly, you know, but you'll change. But, you know, believe in what you believe, principle-wise. And I just think that's a lot big reason why 10 or so guys have become head coaches in this league.
You know, I saw a lot of animation in that room. What's your best story of Andy Reid?
My best Andy Reid story? You know, it really doesn't have to do with Andy Reid. It has to do with the vet.
Okay.
You know, the vet kind of being the metaphor for what it's like in Philadelphia for the head coach. Andy's office was at the bottom of the vet. Okay,
yeah,
as you know, the lowest point in the vet, and the Phillies would play, and all the ramps coming down from the 700 level, they would fire hose the ramps out with water to clean them. I'm sure they had some kind of a breaker system where it would all flush into somewhere where they would dispose of the wretched refuse from the baseball game, right? All the stale beer and everything. Well, some dock got closed, some got channeled the other way, and it all ended up in Andy's office, like during August during training camp. I thought that was a great metaphor for what we were up against.
But did you have any rats in your office?
Well, as long as the Cats were winning, then we had no rats. I had a bird fall through the ceiling on my desk one time. I was wondering what that stain was up there for a few weeks, and next thing you know, it fell through.
John, why is it so hard to win a Super Bowl? You know, in Philadelphia, obviously, we always ask that question. You know,
I think things got to fall in place. You know, a lot of it's, I'm not going to say it's luck, but man, things got to hit for you. It's 32 teams are fighting, and the game turns on a bounce of the ball or a call or something, you know, and just it's got to fall in place for you. You know, it's not easy. And you see the Patriots do it, you know, just like it's nothing, it seems like. So, you know, they've probably figured out more than anybody. I guess we all got to study them and figure out how they're doing it.
Yeah, but, you know, you got it done, but it's not how – it's just not easy.
It's not easy. No, and you got to have some – we had some players that were leaders and, you know, iconic players that knew how to kind of get the job done when it meant the most. You know, the Ed Reeds and the Ray Lewis's and Joe Flacco's.
Right.
You know, you got to have those kind of guys.
All right, I heard you during your session. This Colin Kaepernick thing is beyond ridiculous with some of the players. And obviously you're very outspoken about it.
Yeah, I mean, I like Colin Kaepernick.
It's not blackball. I mean, it's ridiculous.
It's not blackball. I mean, it's just, my point was, it's way too easy to point the bony finger of blame at teams or at something and say, well, that's why, you know. It's more nuanced. It's more complicated. Yes, teams have to work through certain issues, but I know in Baltimore, I mean, this is the way we've always been in Baltimore. You can say what you want, think what you want, believe what you want. There's no such thing as a distraction. Jim was the same. If you love football and you're working at football, what's the distraction? Jim feels the same way. He's going to be a really good player, but I'm sure he's going to play, and I'm sure he's going to win games.
And purple is my favorite color.
You look good in purple, Howard. Really good. I love it.
Again, some really, really good points by John Harbaugh. The vet story is great. Everybody remembers what I would never compare it to Oakland Alameda Coliseum because that place was a toilet. The vet was just run down. There was things that didn't work right. But to have all the sewage and the water flood the head coach's office, I never heard that story before. But that is absolutely great. And I knew where the office was, and there was a tunnel right there where the Eagles used to walk off the field, and the head coach's office was almost across the way. And I can see where all that water came down, and it just kind of drained into there. And it may have fallen through the levels of the stadium to go in his office. I'm sure Andy Reid wasn't a happy guy when that happened. But John Harbaugh said that was obviously the funny story, and he had a funny story about the dead bird. I'll tell you. And for people that don't understand, as long as the Cats won, to try to get rid of the rats in Veterans Stadium, and people may have heard this story, they put a lot of cats in the stadium 24 hours a day. They just put cats there, the cats to chase the rats. So as John Harbaugh said, if the Cats won, then there wasn't that much of a problem with the rats. But he did learn a lot from Andy Reid. And coaches who coach under him or a play under him really do learn a lot. And obviously you hear how hard it is to win the Super Bowl. It really, when you think about the dynamics and all the teams going for it, and I don't know when the Eagles will win a Super Bowl. They will win a Super Bowl. Everybody hopes it's in their lifetime. I think they have a chance in the next 3 years. Peter King, as you heard on our first podcast, thought the Eagles could be one of the Super Bowl opponents in 2018. I wouldn't go that strong. That's not this year, but that's the next year. I would take it a year further from that. It is difficult to win a Super Bowl, but the Eagles have to have a good draft. And I think for those people that are trying to figure out the dynamics that the Eagles have, I think Joe Douglas is going to be the main voice in the draft room as far as what players he feels are worthy of that pick, whether it's the 14th pick in the first round, whether it's their pick, which is now the back end of the second round because they made a trade. Whatever it is, Joe Douglas has a big voice. Howie Roseman's got to take responsibility, so Howie Roseman will have the final call. But I don't see why Howie Roseman would change the thinking. And they know who they like going in. And in the first round especially, they know what players are likely to be there. And they know the player that they think is the best player available, and that's absolutely positively what you have to take in the first. You have to take that player in the first round, the best player available, because eventually you will need that player. I agree in that philosophy, and I think they try to do it the other way, and you can't do it the other way because that doesn't win. And regardless what anybody else says in these mock drafts, the Eagles are better at it than all of us or any of the mock drafts because that's their job. Just because guys on ESPN have a mock draft and they change it every week, I don't know that the Eagles change. I mean, they've talked to a lot of players. They've talked to possible first-round picks, possible second-round picks, possible third-round and beyond that picks. They have, and every team does their homework, so the Eagles aren't any different than anybody else, but they check a lot of different things about players. And they check their background. All right, you hear the name of Reuben Foster, the linebacker. I don't know if Nick Saban, his coach at Alabama, is as a player. I think from what I hear, I think he's in love with him. But as there's some issues that could possibly happen off the field. In case you missed it, Reuben Foster was the only player sent home from the combine because he didn't get along with the medical staff, and I don't know what the hard time was that he gave them, but he gave them a hard time, and that's just not what you do. That's a privilege. The NFL doesn't have to invite you there. That's a privilege to be there. So there are some questions. Now, if he falls to 14, you got to ask yourself two questions. Number one, why did he fall to the 14th pick in the first round? And you have to question that. And then when teams start questioning that, then the players start falling even more. And you've got a question. He's had some personal issues in his life. I believe there was a real serious personal issue in his life between his parents, a real serious one. And he there's questions on whether off the field, because of the things that have happened to him throughout life, off the field, whether he could be an issue. So there are real concerns about that. Now, does that mean he won't be taken in the top 10? No. Some team might say, hey, listen, this guy's so good, we have to take him in the top 10. And who knows, at 14, if he comes there, the Eagles will think long and hard about that, whether to take him, and if there's another player that's the best available. And you've got to consider issues personally, which you feel may affect who he is. As far as Joe Mixon, you haven't heard his name for a while, and there's a good reason you haven't heard his name. I'm hearing more and more that the Eagles will absolutely, and unless it's the seventh round, and I don't even think that's a possibility, the Eagles will not take Joe Mixon in the first or second round. It just won't happen. He is the best running back in the draft by most accounts, but they will absolutely positively not take Joe Mixon. There are just too many issues with that video of him hitting the girl, and she's no angel. When he hit that woman, that tape will be played and played and played and played some more. And if there's an issue, then you always worry, all right, now what's going to happen? Now what's going to happen in this situation? So forget about Joe Mixon. He's out. Then you hear the name of Christian McCaffrey. Understand this. If you draft, and I just don't believe he's the 14th best player in the draft, and a lot of players are shying away from the personal workouts because they get hurt. I don't know if a team told him. Actually, I kind of believe a team told him, hey, listen, if you get to this spot, we want you somewhere before 20. If you get to this spot, we're going to take you. I don't know that the Eagles would would show their hand in that situation. And they could tell a player and tell an agent something and not come through with it. And any team can do that. So we'll see what happens. I just don't think at 14, the Eagles, I would be surprised if the Eagles take Christian McCaffrey. He is a wide receiver. In the world of the NFL, he's a wide receiver. And that's really the way you have to look at. Now, if you want to take a wide receiver at 14, depending on who else is there, then go for it. Could he be a running back? Well, he is a running back, but he will not. He would not carry the ball much. So if that's just understand when you take him, he's a wide receiver, and he's really not a running back. Certainly, he's a really good player. He could do a lot of things. I would still be surprised if they take Christian McCaffrey at 14. As far as a person, he is a grade A on and off the field, and they know that, and that would figure into any thinking. But I would still be surprised that the best player available would be Christian McCaffrey at 14. All right, let me get into this other issue, which happened within the past when I recorded this, within the past few days. The 76ers sent out a press release, news release, whatever you want to call it, and they sent it out to their fans. This is the most embarrassing, ridiculous thing. This tops anything they've ever done. This tops tanking. This tops purposely losing. This tops not playing healthy players because you want to lose. This tops anything you could think of. The Sixers have announced they've partnered up with this company called F45 Fitness. That's one thing, okay. They send out other news releases and other press releases and other things to fans telling that they partnered up with whatever the company may be, and there's been companies I'm sure people remember, that they're a partner now with the 76ers. That's all well and good. That's great. You want to partner up with somebody and they want to pay for it, that's fine. But the Sixers are asking people to invest in this company, to invest, not invest, you know, $50,000, $100,000. They've asked people to invest $150,000 minimum into this company. Now, what team asks their season ticket holders, asks their fans, and puts out a release to have people invest in another company? It's the most embarrassing thing. This is Scott O'Neill written all over it. This is the spin doctor, Scott O'Neill. And when you think of the Sixers, forget about hashtag trust the process. It's trust the profits. That's what it is now with the 76ers. This is the most asinine, ridiculous thing I have ever heard of. It's an embarrassing thing. It's an insult to the people of Philadelphia. And they say in this release, invest $150,000 and you could turn it into $600,000 in the first year. Now, what company, what investment do you know going in you could triple your money? If there was an investment like that, everybody would do it. Well, why would you ask for investors if you can do it? If the billionaire owner of the 76ers, Josh Harris, saw an investment that could turn triple what you invest, why wouldn't he invest in it himself? This just blows me away, and it is so repulsive. It is so repulsive, and I've talked to public relations people, not just in sports, but around the city. It's the most repulsive thing that I have ever seen by an organization to do this. Hey, listen, if you're an investment broker and you're a stock market guy and you're a hedge fund guy, I don't think anybody's ever told anybody, well, if you invest $150,000, you could triple your money. I don't think they tell them that because there's no guarantees that could happen. And I've never heard of the company. People have never heard of the company. I'm just so outraged and appalled that they do this. Now, I wouldn't invest $25 in this. Not a dime. Forget about 20. I would not invest a dime. Just the fact that they put it out there and they tell you you could triple your money if you invest $150,000 and send it to season ticket holders and send it to the media is the most insulting, repulsive thing that I've ever heard of. It's disgraceful. Scott O'Neill, and I don't know how many people care, but you should care, because this is what that organization is about. It's that they have tanked games for three, and now you can call it four. See, they didn't tank until the end and the fourth season. Tank games for, let's say, three-plus seasons, and they increase prices, and they made the most repulsive thing is they made money, and their intention was to lose and still make money. Everybody wants to make money in business. I understand that, and that's what you do in a business. But the 76ers are, they're not owned by the people, the fans of the 76ers, but it's really their team. And you should be outraged at what happened. And I don't want to hear about Sam Hinkie. You should be outraged at what happened. And you should be more outraged that it's obvious in this world that we live in, they care more about making money. And I don't even know, I can't call this a ripoff because I don't know anything about F45 Fitness, so I will not do that. But I know this, in investments, everybody would run to the front door and call the 76ers and say, I want to invest if I can triple my money. And then one of the more shameful things they did an interview with Joel Embiid to try to push this, and they put that on that release. They did a fake interview, fake news. They did a fake interview with Joel Embiid to try to push this. Joel Embiid doesn't know the first thing about F45 Fitness. So is there truth in advertising? Not a chance there's truth in advertising. Repulsive. Absolutely repulsive, and to shamelessly put a player on the face of that and put Joel Embiid on a video in a fake interview, it's like watching some of those infomercials that you know is phony baloney, and put him in that situation. And if that company fails and you lose money in your first year, you lose money, or wait a minute, I invested $150,000. I didn't use that for a home that I wanted to buy because I thought I could triple my money. Outrageous. It's a joke. How's that? It's a joke. Oh, my gosh. I'm just so repulsed by what they try to do. And it's another Ponzi scheme. Call it a Ponzi scheme by the 76ers. Again, I don't know about the company, so I'm not criticizing the company because I don't know them. But I am criticizing the Sixers. It's another Ponzi scheme, another scheme by the 76ers to try to, I don't even know, try to fool fans. And there's no way that any investment company would say you could triple your money in a year. Triple. Who wouldn't want to make $450,000 a year? All right, I could go on and on about things that 76ers have done. We all hope they get better. We all hope the draft gives them some good result, or the ping pong balls, the lottery draft, give them good results. But it is just ridiculous. Scott O'Neill, the spin doctor, strikes again. It's a joke. All right, if you would like to subscribe, and it doesn't cost you anything, and just remember, you can subscribe and it doesn't cost you a dime, to the Howard Eskin podcast, subscribe on iTunes, and what you do, search for the Howard Eskin podcast, leave a rating if you so choose, and a review on iTunes. All right, week three, or podcast three, it's named, but it is week three. Podcast three in the books. Hope you enjoyed Ron Darling, again, very articulate. More good interviews to come. There's some guys that I don't want to mention who they are, that I want to get on the podcast that I think will be real fascinating and interesting to you that you don't hear in the mainstream. So I will work on that and try to give you some more interesting stuff, not just Ron Darling and not just John Harbaugh. We'll have a good one for you in what will be podcast 4. Everybody have a great day, because I've never had a bad day.
from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.